See, I have carved you into eternity. Your walls stretch out continuously before me. Isaiah 49:16, the Ward Green version of 2003. You see the difference between continuously there in the version of yours truly compared to the American Standard? Continually? Continually seems to mean ongoing through time. Whereas continuously could mean ongoing through time or space. So in other words, that the walls continue in all directions or in space for a great distance, or, you know, continuous. So that is a slight difference in the translation that I rendered in 2003. That's our daily scripture for today, little children. Look at this. It was grapes. It's not a cloud. It's green grapes. That's what that leather sample was that they gave, the beautiful little sample that I got from Japan. And the package I got from Japan, I'm still marveling at that. I feel like I have friends in Japan now with that message on the back. It said, on the back of this little, beautiful little, it's kind of like a thank you card in a way. It says, enjoy happy leathercraft life. Beautiful friends. It feels like, it felt like, and still does feel like that. From the moment I ordered it, I felt like they were friends. And then I went through and I checked every single element that I ordered to make sure that all of those things were what I ordered. I can show you what they are. I think I want to do that. I think we'll do that. So how do I do that? I'm trying to think. What's the best way to do that? Maybe I get a new tab and open a file and make that file be, well, I have them all here, right? But I want to open a folder, and I don't know if I can do that. Let's see. Can I open a folder in Safari? Let's see. Open a folder or not? Open a location. Yeah. Let's open a location. And maybe I have to drag it from my hard drive to get that location. Here we go. Does it drag? There. I don't know. Let's see. Doesn't want to, but let's see if we can open it. Let's see. I have a feeling if we try to open this, it's going to open in a new tab. No, I can't open the folder. Okay. Well, that's too bad. Let's see. Okay, there's another way to do it. Okay, we got to do it the other way. Let's just bring this over and let's just click on these things. So I can do shift. That's the tracking, or is that? That's the summary. Right, of the order. That's not. What is that? Okay. No. That's not the right thing. Okay, here it is. Okay, here. Right, and then you go like this. Where is it? Just spacebar. Yeah, spacebar. There it is. No, well, unfortunately, that's going to be not the positive image. It's a negative image. I'd have to reverse it, but you get the idea. That's the little flower-shaped stamp. Don't know if it has a name. It's a flower center, essentially. And then we can just maybe just scroll through them, or can we? Coming here. Let's see. If we click on the next one, and then I go, can I then, okay, hang on. There. Right. That's interesting, isn't it? This is another one. This is the P-368 that was out of stock. So because it was out of stock, that may be why they canceled my order here in North America. Because even in Japan, they were out of stock, but it was Oka, the manufacturer. O-K-A, Oka. But they sold another one by the company Kraft Japan, which is Kraft Shah in their language. But it's a pair shader, the same one, just a lower quality picture, the photo. It's the vertical lines on the pear-shaped shader. The longitudinal lines would be the more accurate way of putting it, along the length of the shader. Well, that was the out of stock, yeah. So then we have, did we look at this one? No, yeah, let's look at this. This is the other non-standard shaped shader. It's a beautiful shape. Of course, that was in stock, and that's Oka. So everything I got was from Oka except the one that was out of stock. And in that case, I got two. But that, isn't that a beautiful shape for a shader? I just was so interested when I saw that. And then there's this one, which we'll try and open this. And this is another one from Oka. It's the plumper pear-shaped shader with vertical lines also, called P215. They each have a number. So I've got them all itemized here. And then there was this one, another small, smooth pear-shaped shader, P233 from Oka. They're all beautiful. The ones even that are from the other company, Kraft Japan. I'm going to have to stop, take a break. I'll be right back. So, continuing, when nature calls, I think it's good to answer. So this we had, this beautiful pear-shaped shader. The other one was a figure, technically not a pear-shaped object, and wasn't called a shader. Actually, it was called a figure. But it's actually a shader, of course, but it's intended not for shading, but for making indications of a particular shape and then repeating that shape. But here's the P368 that I actually ordered from Kraft. It's a pear shader with the vertical lines. It's from Kraft Japan. And on the shaft it says Kraft Japan. It doesn't say made in Japan. It says Kraft Japan. The Oka, they say, they're both made in Japan, but both brands, but the Oka is technically, it says also, it says those words, made in Japan. This is the Oka shader that was in stock, that was the other one I was trying to order in Canada, but it was out, the order was canceled for some reason, but the other one with the vertical or longitudinal lines was out of stock in Japan. So this one was in stock in Japan, and it's P369, which has got the transverse lines on the pear-shaped shader. Beautiful, though. It's just beautiful because it's rare. Having these, either the transverse or the longitudinal lines on a pear-shaped shader that's elongated, it's quite rare. That's why I suppose it was out of stock. And then there was the other one I ordered was P861, which is a different size. I think it's the bigger one, but I'm not sure. But there's a bigger and a smaller Kraft Japan pear-shaped shader with the longitudinal line. So instead of losing out because the Oka version was out of stock, I bought two different sizes of the same style of shader from Kraft Japan. So I got, and they were about $3 US. I paid $90 Canadian, I believe, for the whole, including shipping. So amazing, because I got 14 different styles of stamps. They're all stamps of different kinds. This is a cedar of an oblong shape, an oval shaped cedar. I wasn't able to show you because the quality of the camera focus wasn't good enough. These are just negative images because I can't show you the positive. When I'm making a video, I can only get negative images unless I reverse the images in advance. So here we have one of the cedars, is it? It says usually. These are all Oka tools except for the two I mentioned that were the longitudinal lines on the pear-shaped shader that were from the other company. This is a cedar, S705 it's called. It gives you a little ring around, if you look at the imprint, a ring around the central seed that is a little more decorative as a cedar for making the marks on the leather, right? There's another cedar, S932, makes a stamp like you see to the right there. It's just the inverse, the stamp is the inverse of the what appears on the leather. And the leather is to the right there, and on the left is the tool itself, the leathercraft tool. And then we have, it's called a craft. But I think, there's no reason why, and there's one of the mule foot tools, the mule foot stamp, the U851. These are all Oka, like I said, except for those two. And Oka is really, it's a fine Japanese leathercraft toolmaker, I think you'd say. And I think it's the same as exactly can be said for Craft Japan. Look at this. So that's one of the Vayners. B407. The imprint on the leather is on the upper, in that case, and the tool itself is below, right there. Okay, so I mean, it's such a pleasure to share this. I saved all these things. There's the last Vayner, actually, right there. But, you know, I didn't buy any bevelers because I bought my bevelers separately and paid $73 for them, and that for four of them, which is much more expensive buying them already imported. You know, I bought them from Amazon, but they shipped from somewhere else because they're not. I know that because they didn't arrive overnight. I think that's how I know that. So anyway, I'd have to look into that, but that's not. I don't have any photos of those, do I? They're on the Amazon site. I can show you that, but we'll have to come back to it, I think, if we don't. Maybe we can get through our study today, but we've got 26 minutes left. We've got 20 minutes now, if I'm keeping track. What do we got? Let's look up the... Yeah, I'm going to look it up. Just ordered something that was very interesting. 36-piece beveling. There they are. Let's get that. Here it is, yeah. This yet? Okay, good. Let's drop it in. Right here. So here's what these look like. Yeah, I think we're not going to get a very clear, unfortunately. Let's see if we can look at it here. That's better, yeah. Maybe we can see it right there, yeah. There you go. So those are the four. Of different widths, these bevelers, and they're very smooth and polished on the ends of them. They have an angled face, as you can see, by looking at the side view of them. They're triangular, so that when you punch down, they widen out a groove that you've already cut in the leather. They're called bevelers. You can maybe get that's a good picture right there. Hang on. Right there. Let's see. Yeah, there we go. That's what they look like. You know, but again, it's an angled face, so you can see that if it were just flat, it would just be making a square impression, but it's not. It widens out a groove that you've already cut. There were three different widths of these bevelers, you see. I got four of them. The two narrowest ones had either a little bit of a notch or a little chip out of one, out of the business end, or on the edge of the narrowest one, there were some little chips on one of the edges. So, and one of the edges of this, the second biggest one, wasn't quite as well polished on one of the edges as it was everywhere else. But they were, they're good enough. I can repolish them myself, I think, and they look to be very good quality. So that's it. But let's come back to our study. We've got the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, Chapter 5, Paragraph 10 today. Quoting from the Bible at Matthew 4:10, "Go away, Satan," Jesus said. "We serve only Yahweh," or Jehovah, represented by the Tetragrammaton in the Hebrew language. Even in Greek texts, the most ancient Greek texts of the, whether it be the New or the Old Testament texts, the name of Jehovah appears in the Hebrew four-letter tetragrammaton, it's called, returning to the eclipse of Nimrod, an unbelievable happenstance. That eclipse of Nimrod, were it not for the fact that it was depicted by the Narmer Palette and is confirmed by Thoth. What's this? Let's move that back. Just making a lot of extra light. Okay. Confirmed by Thoth, the month named after the second Egyptian king. Right, so because the calendar has its first month named after the second Egyptian king, which who we believe was the one ruling in Egypt, whereas Nimrod ruled in Shinar. So you see, he's really in a sense the first Egyptian king, even though he comes second on the list of Manetho. So it's remarkable that this name of the month Thoth confirms this eclipse as being of the right time period, because it's the same time period as the beginning of the Egyptian calendar, since it coincides with the rising of Sothis in that year, 2774, at the Ark site. But also, the Narmer Palette indicates an eclipse, right? Evidently, and we saw that. And also, in paragraph 312, we noted that the alignment of Sothis came 4 years earlier, in 2778 BCE, on the latitude of Eridu, or Old Babel, because, wait a minute, 4 years earlier, yes, relative to the date of the beginning. That is, it's not the Sothic alignment, it's the Sothic alignment in the Egyptian calendar, is what we're talking about, with Thoth 1, that occurs 4 years earlier as you go north, whereas the Sothic alignment with the calendar, it was Thoth 1 in Egypt at the time of the eclipse. Or the rising of Sothis occurred in Egypt at the time of the eclipse at the Ark site. The eclipse is separate from the Sothic alignment, which was at the eclipse was at the Ark site. But the Sothic alignment was 2774 in Egypt. I think that was in the north of Egypt, I believe is what we were saying. Yeah, because it was July 18th, which is, that's Memphis, that's the north, when it occurs on July 18th. If it's in Thebes, it's July 13th or 14th at that latitude. So it's all very interdependent, but 2778 is 4 years earlier because it's north, and it would have been 20 years earlier at Memphis than it was in Thebes, because Memphis was north, so 4 years earlier at Eridu than Memphis. And Eridu is called Old Babel, or South Shinar. So we have 2778 for the Sothic alignment at Eridu. And Eridu, we mentioned that earlier, but also Eridu is known as the oldest city in southern Mesopotamia. Not the oldest city ever, because that would be up at the Ark site, Nakhchivan, or the city of Eight, where Noah lived. So Eridu is known as the oldest city in southern Mesopotamia, because that's where the Tower of Babel may have been built. It also targets the remains of the largest known ziggurat. Ziggurat was a temple, like a tower of some, but not a vertical kind of structure. But it was bigger than or taller than some of the other structures. That's why it was, you know, proposed by some people as having been the Tower of Babel also. But the oldest, the largest known ziggurat, it says there, is found, its remains are found at Eridu, this ancient city, the oldest city. Bitumen was found at the site. Okay, now, I mean, it's the oldest city. It has the largest, the remains of the largest known ziggurat. It's sort of hinting at the Tower of Babel, isn't it? And then bitumen was found at the sites. We don't have a lot of proof because it's so ancient. But Jubilees 10 and 20 mentions the fact they used bitumen when they built the tower, and they found bitumen at the site. Or bitumen. Mr. Jackson allotted a 6-year rule to Nimrod, and Nimrod ruling 6 years after 43 years of the tower would be 2778 minus 43 minus 6 is 2774. Which is totally different from 2778, right? Which is where Esophis aligned at Eridu, which was because it was further north. 4 years it was the difference because of the more northerly latitude. Okay, 2729 is the answer for 2778 minus 43 minus 6. So that would be the beginning of Egyptian rule after Nimrod 6 years. In other words, so it's perfect. We're right back to 2729 again, which is incredible because we arrived at that several ways already. Now, when Nimrod given 69 years in the Kitab al-Magal, we could do a calculation 2778 minus 69 for comparison. That's 2709, the beginning of Thoth's rule from Eridu, with the 20-year difference between 2729 and 2709, right? And remember, Mr. Jackson said there was a 22-year time lag between Shinar and Egypt, so there's a 20-year difference right there, so that's pretty close to 22. May we indulge for a moment in the reigns of Africanus and Eusebius. You notice the ancient S, it looks rather like the F of the modern alphabet. So Eusebius on Mr. Fotheringham's page 118, where we allow that Menes is Nimrod and using the 20 years that Nimrod's reign overlapped with Egypt, we may reconcile. Yeah, because if Egypt began in 2729, but Nimrod's rule ended in 2709, then there was an overlap of 20. The difference between those two numbers, 2729 and 2709. Okay. We may reconcile the 35 years of discrepancy between the totals of Africanus 263 and Eusebius 228. That was for Dynasty 1 of Manetho, according to those two, Africanus and Eusebius, in part by taking Eusebius from Thoth in 2709 and subtracting from Africanus 20 years. I feel like I'm going to have to show you this again, so it's all a question of how quickly I can get there. We found it. That's good. Pretty quick to get there. There it is. See the totals? 263 for Africanus, 228 for Eusebius, and that's from the Manethan dynasties of Africanus and Eusebius. Because we can forget which numbers we're talking about if we don't keep referring back. In part by taking Eusebius from Thoth in 2709 and subtracting from Africanus 20 years. So if we count Eusebius from 2709 and we count Africanus from the other date, right? But we take Africanus as being 20 years less because of the overlapping 20 years. So we don't take 263, but we take 243 for Africanus. So then we get 27, 09 minus 228 minus 215 for Eusebius. Here the 215 is the Arabian dynasty that comes after the first dynasty. According to the Arabian dynasty is from, it's, I don't think it's from Africanus, or I don't think it's from Eusebius, is it? I mean, I don't think it's from Manetho. 215, is that the second one? No, it doesn't come from that source. It's from Mr. Jackson's book and other sources that mention the Arabian dynasty, perhaps maybe agree with or have that number too, but we're talking about the 215 here. I lost track of where I was. There it is. So when we subtract, we get 2266 for the case of Eusebius. For Africanus, we get 2271. Using the 2729 minus 243 minus 215. Okay, so those two results would be the first year of the reign of Sargon of Akkad after the end of the Arabian dynasty. And because we can see that the average of these two numbers is not far from 2268 BCE, it's kind of, you know, we can kind of rest our case as proven there. But look at this quote from Juris Zarens of Southwest Missouri, SU. What's that? Southwestern University? I'm not sure what that SU is. In the Journal of the American Oriental Society, 112.1, pages 55 to 77, he wrote, "Many regard the attempt to deal with early history as an exercise in futility, or at best, a stepchild of the real thing." This is amazing, this quote. Continuing the quote, "Modern historians of early Mesopotamia, Egypt, China, and the Maya find themselves delving into realms often uncharted by analysts of later historical data, and utilizing data often ignored in later periods. Literary texts emphasize the connection between the Eridu waters and the bitumen. Certainly during the Ubaid and Uruk periods, bitumen was exploited at Eridu. The use of bitumen for basketry and as a ceramic wash is well known through the 3rd and early 2nd millennia BC in East Arabia and Bahrain." Page 68, "The nature of Mesopotamian society during the period 3200 to 2500 BC, when writing was introduced, remains particularly elusive and debatable." So he even agrees with our dating for the beginning of writing as being after 3200, since our date for the deluge is 3282, it's perfectly consistent with our date for the deluge, and that's from 1992, the Journal of the American Oriental Society, Juris Zarens, "The Early Settlement of Southern Mesopotamia," Juris Zarens, "A Review of Recent Historical, Geological, and Archaeological Research." Volume 112, number 1, January to March 1992, pages 55 to 77. End quote. Now, prehistory cannot be dated, we continue our reading of our paragraph, as there was no writing of it. So we can't date something if there's no writing. That's a very profound statement, deceptively profound statement, perhaps, but it's utterly true. What could be better than the chronology as we see it now? See, as somebody else said, there's no way of dating an object just by using, you know, any known method that we have. There are no ways of accurately dating something just by looking at it or examining it or doing a test. Nothing is really known accurately about its date unless there's some writing. With Adam in the autumn of 5550 BCE, in whole years, the eclipse of Nimrod is exactly halfway to 1 CE. This is where we get into this amazing thing about... I was going to do this search. Let's do a search. Site. I don't know what to click on here. What can I click on? Site. I don't want to click on something here because I need to do it somewhere else. Hang on. Site. There we go. Let's just bring it up right here. Jehovah willing here would try this. Bring up the word. Come on. 2776. I thought I was... We don't have much time. Where is it? Come on. Don't allow anything. When they say allow something, just say no. It's always safer. Sincelis dated Nimrod to 2776 Anamundi. Okay, that's talking about, not Sincelis, but that's talking about Africanus, who got his data from Sincelis, I believe. Let's see what we have. Sincelis, yeah. Africanus, okay. No, Sincelis dated Nimrod to 2776. Okay. That's from the preservation article, paragraph 512. That's very profound. That's one of our articles, but that's very profound because that 2776 Anno Mundi means, with the year one Anno Mundi being the first year, that's 2775 years after year one. 2775 is the same number that we're talking about right here. When we subtract 5550 minus that number, 2775, we get 2775, which would be the year 2776 Anno Mundi. Because the year one, you know, is the first year Anno Mundi. So 2775 from there, from that point to one of the common era is also 2775 years. So this is exactly the halfway point. 2775 is exactly the halfway point. And that's even with the eclipse of Nimrod occurring in the next year, 2774. Since it's not late in that year, it's still exactly the same number of whole years. It's perfect. So that's it for today's study. The Narmer palette did away with prehistory as we know it. It's October 30th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 2028 hours North American Eastern Daylight Time, and I'm Ward Green. And thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Lib Dusty and this is Cassie saying bye for now. That's paragraph 510 of the Ark of Urartu. And we have only about 10 seconds left for today's study. See you tomorrow.